Welcome to Straight from the Muzzle, folks, where we are anything but straight. My name is Space.
I'm Sparrow.
And I'm Ruby.
And we welcome you to our episode, which is about what today?
So today we are going to be discussing women in the furry fandom.
Yep.
Face.
I just thought you were going to go further into that. I was just like, okay.
Do you want me to?
No, I can explain a little bit. So it's Women's History Month, and we thought it'd be the perfect thing to do to celebrate all things women. And we decided to do an episode such as this. Now we have three of us here. Ruby, do you kind of want to explain how the three of us kind of work out with this episode?
Well, me and you were going to sit down and record it a few days ago, and I'm like, okay, we have the trans woman, we have an XXY man, and people are going to bitch that we don't have an assigned female at birth. So, hi, Sparrow.
Hello.
I figured we have our bases. I figured we have our bases covered. Yeah. So when people inevitably bitch, we can go, hey, fuck you.
We had the coverage.
It's so funny because I was like, I didn't even think about it. I was like, yeah, I mean, there's a woman on the show and it's fine. And I made the show notes, even though I originally wasn't going to be recording with you guys, but it made sense that we should have, like, you know, maybe a collect the whole set kind of thing going on.
Well, I mean, being that I deal with transphobes and shit on Twitter all the time, I know like what responses are coming.
Yeah. I get that. I mean, and that kind of like delves into the idea of the diversity part of it, because when we talk about Women's History Month, there's going to be TERFs that are like, yeah, Women's History Month. And I'm like, okay, shut up. Go back to bed, honey. Go back to bed, sweetie.
Go back to suckling on J.K. Rowling's tit and leave me alone.
God.
But like, I mean, this is a furry podcast, right? And I think most furries at this point, you know, I wouldn't say that furries are mostly TERFs, right? We understand that this is a really diverse community and women come in all colors, shapes, sizes, backgrounds.
You say diverse or diverse?
I said diverse.
Chris, you said diverse. And I'm diverse. Like, what?
I mean, tomato, tomato, I guess. Whatever.
I guess.
But like the crazy thing is that it's weird to think that, you know, you're going to get a lot of comments like that if you didn't have an assigned woman at birth on the show for this particular episode. And it's like, okay, you're going to ignore women in the fandom for most of the time until it's a trans woman talking. Then you're going to go in and start being hateful. Okay.
Yep.
Oh, man.
The reasons people find to hate is limitless. So just had the idea to divert as much as we can so that we give them at least they have to be a little more creative.
Yeah, I mean, creative with that. But also, it just genuinely helps to get all perspectives, right? I mean, and that's the main purpose of this episode is to bring light to the experiences and contributions of women in the furry fandom. And that includes all women, right? Not just cis women. So we're all here to put in our piece of the pie today.
Yep. Plus, just in general, I always think those who go out of their way to make a big deal about women, lesbians, or whatever, trans, I like to secretly think that they're gay. And they're just too afraid to acknowledge it.
Maybe so. I mean, gay people can be transphobic too.
They're just jealous. I got to reroll my character sheet. Okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
Stuck with
that. I mean,
theirs.
And even then, I'm technically agender. And I was playing, oh my God,
yes,
I can't remember.
Yes, being female is a gender.
I can't remember.
Just sorry. I was literally about to say when you said I'm agender. It's like, yeah. And I was playing. It's like, yeah, you're playing as our token female today. Well, no, when you said I was playing, I'm like, oh, yeah, you're playing our token female today. Cool.
Ta-da! Oh, yay. I was like, it was a card game that's a lot like D&D. And you get to, in the beginning, there's some cards that are like, oh, only males can use this or only females can use this. And I didn't come across one of those cards until we were in the middle of the game. And all my friends looked up at me and they're like, well, which one are you today?
Wow.
And I was like, all right, I'll just pick one for now.
There is actually a magic card called Sex Appeal, and it has different effects depending on who's playing it.
Yeah, cards like that.
That's ridiculous.
Oh my goodness.
And the convenient part is it gives more abilities to someone if they are the minority gender in the room. Oh, I love it.
That's fun.
Because there are not a lot of women at magic events normally.
Let's go over some of the, what do you call it? The data? Yeah, the data, the demographics of the fandom real quick.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. That's a good idea to start with. So typically when we think of the furry fandom, we think of diversity. It's a pretty diverse community in general, but there are some numbers have been drawn from a few different surveys by FurScience that gives you official stats. And I think it's important for us to consider those stats whenever we go into talk about women in the furry fandom specifically. So what are some numbers we have from this website?
Let's see, are we using which set are we using?
Both. I think we should discuss both. We have gender identity when that's trans inclusionary, and then we have one that's a little more, it has cis numbers as well. So we have two mm-hmm. different charts we're looking at.
Are we looking at the identification chart first?
Mm-hmm. The first one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So currently we have three different years that we can look at. There's a 2018, a 2017, and a 2020. I kind of pointed out that it's really interesting that in 2017, the female presence was about 20%, almost 21. Mm-hmm. And then in 2018, it went up to 25%. But what I can't gather, and I think I might have a possibility of what's going on here, is that in 2020, that presence went from 25 down to 1.1%.
It's 2020, so I'm sure COVID has a lot to do with that. Women were probably staying home more.
Probably.
And mm-hmm. like, not to like put a jab, but they say that women's lifespans are longer for a reason. Men tend to do dumber things like get themselves killed. So
I use that stat all the time at work.
So 1.1% of women went to Anthrocon in summer of 2020, probably because most of them had the sense to stay home.
Mm-hmm. However, the really interesting thing about the numbers, though, is that if you go back to 2017, you look at transgender male to female to male, and non-conforming, the numbers are fairly low, being like 3%, 2%, 1%. In 2018, that number goes up about 4% across the board. But in 2020, those numbers jump way up to about 12.5%, which is phenomenal.
Also note that they merged.
They merged all the different sectors to mix up transgender and the non-binary.
But even if you look at Anthrocon 2017, if you combine the percentages for trans and transgender male to female and female to male, it's still about 5 or 6%, whereas it's 12.5% that in 2020. So it's still increased by like at least double. And I have a feeling that's a lot to do with more visibility getting out there, more people learning about themselves. And the more you learn about yourself, the more your identity, you know, changes and flows with you.
Well, and also to use the chart for left-handedness, when it stopped being like a punishable thing, the numbers went up because people are now like, okay, cool. I can come out now without, you know, people wanting to kill me as often.
That is also a thing too. So I really didn't pay attention to 2017, 18, really much anything that happened during the pandemic. I kind of just wanted to forget everything that happened during the pandemic, to be honest. It was just several years worth of shit.
You got trauma-based memory loss, babe.
Seriously. But yeah, I lost my train of thought. I totally just went blank.
Oh, God.
That's what happens.
So if we look at these charts, the first one, and I'm going to look at 2018 because I feel like the numbers for 2020 are going to be skewed because of the pandemic, and 2018 is the most recent number we have that's probably more accurate, right?
Yeah.
So if we look at Anthrocon attendees 2018, and just for background knowledge, Anthrocon is a pretty reliable sample to pull from because it is, and I think was at the time as well, the largest furry convention.
It was at the time, I think, one of them finally dethroned Anthrocon.
I think so. But at the time, it was the largest. So it had a pretty good sample size.
Yeah.
So in Anthrocon of 2018, 72% of furries identified as male, 25% identified as female, 4% were male to female transgender, and then 4% was also female to male transgender. And then we have some other numbers here too, like just gender nonconforming, non-binary, gender queer, gender fluid, etc. But we're going to keep the pool just for simplicity's sake around male, female, and then transgender. So that was Anthrocon of 2018. If we look at the numbers where it goes down into cis male, cis female, and then transgender. In, let's see, in 2018, 66.6% identified as cis male, 18.6% identified as cis female, and then around 3-4% identified as trans male and trans female. So those discrepancies are pretty big.
Actually, I just kind of realized something. When you click on 2018, 2017, or 2020, the information down below in the gender identity of furries does not change. So I'm not sure what graph that's actually most.
It's using the 2018 study.
Is it though?
Yes. If you scan over the reference note, the 3 and the 4, it highlights that it's using the 2018.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. Even when you said it, I'm like, ooh, where?
So I'd rather focus on the first graph because in this podcast, men are men and women are women, regardless if you're trans or cis, right? So just looking at male and female labels alone, only 25% of the fandom, if we add in trans women, 29% then. 29% of the fandom would be female. That's a really low percentage. And it's so strange because as a woman in the fandom, especially going to cons and things like that, it doesn't feel that way. It feels a lot more diverse now, but it's just crazy because, I mean, 2018 wasn't that long ago.
I mean, and it's also the thing that...
It's like six years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh my God, it was.
That's a long time ago, girl.
Is it? It doesn't feel that long.
Four, yeah.
6 years?
Mm-hmm. You're talking to someone who has time blindness. That might as well have been yesterday.
So numbers are bad for me.
Yeah, I have time blindness. This could have been yesterday and I wouldn't believe you.
And you're talking to a guy who refuses to acknowledge that he's 37 years old and he's really just 21. So
yeah. I'm 37 too. Bite me.
Oh my God. So with just those numbers being thrown around, being said that the number of women in the furry fandom, trans or cis, is fairly low in comparison to the male populations.
But should we be surprised by that, though? Like, should anyone be?
I'm not surprised, but I think it will generally change as the fandom ages.
Well, I hope it does.
Yeah.
I think it naturally will.
I'm kind of interested to know, I mean, just out in general, like, curiosity here, is what the numbers would look like if you compare this to, like, an anime convention.
They have those numbers on the First Science website, and it looks fairly similar, actually.
Really?
Yep. Anime cons, furry cons, comic cons, all of them look like it's about 20-30% of the population are women. And
it looks like anime cons are the only ones that come close
to half and half.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's sad. That's so sad.
But also, I was going to mention, if you look at the people that are well known in the fandom, it feels like it should be closer to even, because if I ask you for the big names in the fandom, like, as far as I can think of, the majority of the top 10 would be
male.
Female.
Oh.
They would be female. And actually, there was a point I was going to discuss regarding that. I think it's because women have this, a lot of women, I say, whether you think about it or not, it's almost like maybe a survival instinct, feel the need to have to perform or to prove themselves in order to be within a space. So that, I think that performance aspect comes in, oh, I have to be an artist. I have to make something. I have to create fursuits. I have to do this and that. And so because the furry community is mostly male, maybe women that want to get in feel like they have to make something in order to get their foot in the door. Right. So I think that's why so many big creators are women. It might also go into the negative stereotype that men can't do effeminate things like sewing. You know, that might also go into it when it at least comes to fursuit making. But
I could see that. I'd like to think that majority of the fursuit makers out there are prominently women.
Or genderqueer.
Yeah, because even if you look at things like the This Is Life episode, it was 2 female, 1 male interviewed.
Yeah. So
go by those numbers, it feels a lot different.
It really does. And even just walking around in a convention and like the dealer's den, so many female sellers.
Oh, yeah.
Tons.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that is that performative aspect of it. I know I didn't think of it that way when I started getting into crafting and making fursuits and things like that as a kid. But then again, you know, just as a woman living in society, I felt the need to have to do things all the time anyway. So maybe it was just a natural progression. It didn't feel like I thought of it that way. But I think just societally, that's how it went.
Do you feel that women in the fandom were more approachable than men in the fandom?
I think so, but that is coming from a woman who feels uncomfortable talking to men generally. I think
I have a hard time talking to men, like at conventions, but for whatever reason, I click with a woman super easily. And then when I'm in the dealer's den or the artist alley, I feel like it's more of a connection to talk with them. They're more willing to open up, whereas guys just kind of sit there.
Well, let me ask you kind of a personal question, I guess, Space. In the past, when you've dealt with homophobia, has it mostly come from women or men?
Men.
Okay. So that's probably contributing to why you feel more comfortable approaching women in and out of the fandom both. Because if you've experienced a lot of negative things coming from men, then, you know, it could be harder to approach them just out of that survival instinct.
Most of my doctors are women. My supervisors and managers are women. Most of my friends are women, not including like the gay friends that I have. It's just when I think of like men and the camaraderie that they have and the masculinity and things of that nature, when I come close to someone like that, it makes me feel weird inside and I don't like it. And I feel a lot closer to females than I do men, per se.
Yeah. And I mean, whenever the image I come in my head when you describe that, like the camaraderie that comes with being like a manly man.
Men!
Like, men, men! Yeah. Like, I eat a dozen eggs. What was it? Oh, God, what's the guy from Beauty and the Beast?
Actually, Gaston.
Gaston! Yeah. No,
right now, I'm singing Men in Tights in my head.
Well, I was thinking like, okay, you guys have all seen the Barbie movie, right?
Yes.
No, I have not.
Oh, you go back to Kenland, and Kenland turns it into like a very manly manland, and they're always like, men, 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 you know? That's kind of how it feels.
And I mean, and that's really unfortunate because it ties into that, the stereotyping, right? And when we think of stereotypes, we typically think of minorities, right? Like people of color have to deal with stereotyping. Women have to deal with stereotyping. You know, lesbians, gay men, we all have to deal with stereotyping. However, cis men have to deal with stereotyping too. That's the idea of toxic masculinity, right? So that, you know, that sausage fest idea, that that men, men, men thing that you imagine when you think of that camaraderie. I mean, it can be positive for some men, right? Having that connection, but it also just, it can make other men like you, Space, or queer men, or any, or just any man that doesn't fit within that mold, feel inferior, right? Like men can't be too emotional, or men can't do this, they can't do that. Like, it's harmful for men too, as well as it is for queer people and women and all of that. It hurts everybody.
Yep.
And it's probably the reason why I don't get along with my brothers, because they're so tight-knit with each other, and they do very manly things. I do not. I do the complete opposite. So maybe that's probably why.
It's just really an unfortunate circumstance that it affects everybody, not only stereotyping, but toxic masculinity. And it's harmful. It's just overall really harmful. Mm-hmm. A lot of women have to deal with stereotyping, especially within the furry fandom, too. Like, God, when we think of like gender stereotypes, that's easy. But what are some furry stereotypes that you could just spit out quickly? Ruby, what do you got?
I'm trying. Yeah. The thing is, the next one coming out is that it's a fetish. There's a ton of them. It's trying to narrow it down in my own head.
It's like the first one that pops up.
Yeah. God, I don't know. I truly don't know. I'm drawing so many blanks right now.
No, I mean, I think that's a good start. The fact that the very first thing that people think of when they think of furry is fetish.
Like, yeah.
Bam, that's it, immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, it pops into my head because if you click on the Fur Science, one of their topics is about, like, it being, like, and also we're dealing with right now, the puppyhood thing popping back
out. I love puppies! Oh, they're so cute! But it's weird, though, because here's the thing with pups. I like them on men, I don't like them on women.
That might be because, is it a sexual attraction for you, maybe?
That's sexual attraction.
Yeah, that might be why, because you're a gay man.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm the exact opposite.
I've seen some really great looking pups out there for women-wise, but it's just not for me.
Yeah,
men, yes, come my way.
Well, that tracks, right?
Yeah.
So the idea that the main stereotype for furries is that it's a fetish is for everybody, right? Regardless of what your gender identity is. If you identify as a furry, someone is going to assume that it's a fetish for you, which is just simply not true. Mm-hmm. But if you tie women into this also, like just women, whether they're furries or not, are fetishized by communities or just society in general.
This is part of the reason why I made the joke of having all three of us here. Our comment to that is being a transgender woman is marked as being a fetish.
Yep, it is.
I catch that shit all the
really?
Time. Yeah.
Yeah.
That I'm only presenting as a woman so that I can get the attention and feed off of the euphoria / in their opinion, sexual gratification of being identified as a woman.
I have never heard that.
Yeah, trans men deal with it too.
Yeah, just from what I can tell, not as much. It's like almost all the hate is thrown to trans women.
Oh, wait. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm misremembering. When it comes to your version of fetishization?
Is that how fetishizing? Yeah.
Yeah, fetishizing. Like, that is certainly true for trans women. I think when it comes to trans men, it'll be men that fetishize the idea of a woman being masculine. So they still don't see that trans man as a man. So it still ties into fetishizing women, mm-hmm. whether it's a trans woman or a trans man still being seen as a woman.
Yeah. But yeah, it's anything. Basically, furry falls the same as about anything else, that if it's outside of the norm, the only way that a lot of people can justify it is that it's sexual.
Yeah. If it's abnormal, you must get your rocks off to it, certainly. Like, No. No, so we just kind of think that cartoon animals are fun and cool, actually.
Yeah.
So I think that because it's seen as a fetish and women are already fetishized, it causes not only like furry characters who are women to be fetishized constantly, but also just the women in furry spaces in general, from both outsiders and from furries themselves. Like, uh-huh. I know for me personally, like my fursuit, I can make it feminine or I can make it neutral. And I know a lot of feminine fursuiters, whether the person inside of the suit identifies as a woman or not, they tend to get a lot of creeps at conventions.
Actually, a really good example in terms of using media, I'm going to bring up this episode, the CSI episode.
Oh, God.
How many, if you watch back onto the fur pile scene, how many men were in female fursuits?
Most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, even like Blue Kitty was a guy.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I haven't watched that episode in so long. You're so right.
I remember it because it comes up in terms of just, I'm a graphic designer, media and shit like that's me. So I remember that scene exclusively. Like, every one of the lamb, any of the sheep, most of the feminine cats, when they took their hoods off, they were guys.
And that really ties back into what you said about people seeing being trans as a fetish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just can't be a woman. You have to make being a woman a fetish. Well,
I mean, look at how much is fetishized with drag queens.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. And I am a former drag queen, and I've known a lot of drag queens. They're fun. Those bitches are crazy, but it's not a sexual fetish for the most part.
It's a performance art.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I could totally live in the world where it was just drag kings and queens, and I would be totally okay with that.
Honestly. Like,
it would be so... No day would go by that would be boring. It would always be interesting.
You know, I think because so many people will connect that femininity in a costume to being a fetish, like, regardless of who the wearer is, they think it's okay to be a creep towards them, because it's like, oh, if they're wearing a feminine suit, they're... Surely they're asking for it because it's, you know, it's a sexual thing for them too.
That right? exact term right there.
It's just, it's like, no, mm-hmm. this isn't consensual. Some people just want to express their femininity. That's all. Yeah. Like, it's not sexual. And by going and being a creep and taking pictures without permission or following people or touching them without asking, like, you're just perpetuating that terrible, terrible stereotype. I know.
I'm currently wrapped into a little ball right now. So
the question I have, though, is can people really tell that it's a woman behind in the fursuit?
It doesn't matter.
Because honestly, I can't tell.
It doesn't matter
to them. As long as what is being performed
portrayed
is feminine, then it doesn't matter to them. And oftentimes, some people, especially I think queer men, would prefer it's a man underneath, even though it's a feminine suit. Or a feminine character. I think that adds to that taboo appeal that goes with them non-consensually approaching them. When I first got Sparrow's suit, I got her head from a different maker, and I made her bodysuit myself. And her bodysuit doesn't have breasts, nothing like that. I made it as bear-shaped as possible. So it's heavily padded, but it's like bear-shaped padding, right? Yeah. So like, you know, just normal but big. So a lot of stuffing. But her fursuit head came with a bunch of different eyelid options, and one of them was like more feminine eyelids, really cute. And I was like, you know, I want to go mama bear mode. I didn't think it looked sexual at all. And even if I my suit did have like, you know, a chest or anything like that, wouldn't matter anyway, right? Mm-hmm. But she doesn't. That only adds to it. I was wearing feminine eyelids with my bear suit and walking around FWA. And I was out. We were at a punk concert with my friends, and we were all dancing in suit. And this guy was like, came up and was like, hey, can I get your picture? It started off very normal, right? And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. Posed. And then we kept dancing. And this guy, he wouldn't leave us alone. And he was particularly targeting me. And I still had like my head on and stuff, but I could see him out of the corner of my eye, like filming me without my permission. And like, whenever I tried to look at him to like get a better look to see what he was doing, he kept like touching my arm and like, you know, filming me even more like prominently. And he was like, hey, babe, you really know how to dance. And I'm like,
ew.
And I was like, I'm literally in a suit that's like me wrapping an entire mattress around my body. This is a plush fursuit. And I'm like, what do you mean I know how to dance? I'm just bebopping around, like literally not. Nothing looked sexual. Wasn't doing anything particularly sexual. The only thing that he was picking up as sexual was feminine eyelids on my fursuit. So it could be something as simple as that. You don't need to have a chest on your fursuit. You don't need to have hips on your fursuit. You could just have a normal, if anything, my fursuit's very round. There's no shapes there to sexualize. He just picked up, he just focused on the feminine eyelids and he started stalking me. He followed me to three different locations. And finally we had to, like, I took my head off and went to the Headless Lounge to escape him and went back to my hotel room and didn't put my fursuit back on for the rest of the night because I felt uncomfortable. Like, it could be anything feminine. It doesn't have to be body shapes at all. They could just pick up on the most minuscule feminized thing, take it, and roll with it.
Now, what are your thoughts on that fursuit that has, it's like a horse?
Oh, yeah, I love her. That's still, and I follow them. I love, I can't think of their name all of a sudden.
I can't remember her name. We all call her Booby Horse, but.
But it falls into that category of drag queen.
Yeah, it does.
It's exaggerated. Now, the person in the suit, I believe, is trans female.
Yes.
The suit predates that, but it's a performance art. It's goofy. It's out there. Fiona.
Yep. Fiona. Yes.
I love her.
She's wonderful.
So fucking much. She's so sweet. So the suit's beautiful. Her performance, her personality.
Also, big titty horse.
but at the same time, she plays with it so perfectly. She plays that part without it being creepy. Like, yes, it's exaggerated. It's fully, I mean, it's the most exaggerated you can possibly get on a human fursuit. But it doesn't feel out of place or creepy. It's creepy how people treat her, but she doesn't look out of place, in my opinion. It all, the big bimbo-ish lips, all of it, it fits with the performance.
Yeah. It's not the suitor or the characters themselves that are choosing to be sexualized. It's the people. It's people's behaviors towards them.
But I can also go on to the flip side of, and again, nothing against this person because I love them too, Dragor.
Dragor.
Literally.
Like a really buff male fursuiter?
No, he's actually a really skinny little twink, but he has a big package. Naturally. So his skin tight suits naturally emphasize that a little bit. If you look up Dragor, usually does an imp from Doom, an imp from Doom. Are Robbie from Dinosaurs or Spider-Man. He's big with, or used to be, but I don't know if he still is going to listen to him anymore, the Dragot Show. But
I think I found him.
There's a ton of jokes about it, but it's never to the level of shit that Fiona gets.
Because it's more masculine.
The female form is naturally sexualized no matter what.
Yeah, you can go full Fiona and have a really big chest on your fursuit, or you can just have feminine eyelids. It doesn't matter. People will try to target you for it.
Yep. That's the.
And that's really unfortunate because I feel like that's behavior that needs to be altered on those who are harassing. Those being harassed can't do anything about it. Yeah. Besides, I told myself when I was being stalked by that person at FWA, I was, upset that I didn't do anything about it. It was my first time experiencing something to that extent. And now in my head, I'm like, all right, next time that happens, I'm taking my head off and I am confronting this person. Because I think the more people act in fear and just quietly try to walk away or try to ignore it, the more it's going to perpetuate that it's okay for people to do that. So I'm like, all right, next time I'm ripping my fursuit head off and I'm slapping the phone out of that person's hands, I'm going to be like, you're going to get away from me. You're filming me without permission. Time for you to go, buddy.
And the thing is, you could say, oh, well, you could, or let's just use someone like Fiona, a woman. I think there is actually people that have her proportions, but still. Oh, you could dress more modestly. There was a time when women wore like 15 layers of clothes. And
I never understood that.
Sexual assault still happened.
Yeah.
Those things still happened. It has nothing to do with the clothes.
No.
Naked to full nun, it's the fetishizing of it that people, sexualizing of it that people feed off of.
And we don't want none of that.
Nope. Even though I do love her, I keep looking at the fursuit. I love her fursuit so damn much because she owns it and I love it.
I see those big boobs and I'm just like, oh my God. Huge. I'll get rid of the picture.
Okay.
That's back to normal again.
It's fine. I follow her on Twitter.
It? You liked it? Okay, there we go. Oh, it gets back
it's
now.
Fine. It's fine. I follow her on Twitter.
I brought her back.
So we keep talking about this big titty horse. So,
but she's also the perfect example of what we're talking about. Though.
She is, though. She really is. And we appreciate her for that. Oh, my God. So with all this being said, with women and titty horses and whatever, obviously, furry is seen as an abnormality, right? Whether you see it as a fetish or not, it's still seen as socially strange and abnormal. It's different from the societal norm. And when you remove furry, societal norms for women are already stricter compared to men. Like, women have to be polite. They have to be accommodating, nurturing, feminine. And if you break these norms in any way, you can be othered. So now add being a furry on top of this, and it just makes it worse. It perpetuates it even further. Ruby.
Yep. What?
It's her turn.
It's your turn.
Oh, it's my turn?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. So
you hear like these butt noises in the back. What is she doing?
I was shifting in my seat. Bite me. But yeah, societal norms, at least like, especially for trans women. And this is something I've had to learn because I've spent 34 years as a guy. A feminine, very, very not masculine guy, but a guy, I followed those rules. Learning the new ones has been weird. Again, being quieter, even online with people like going after trans women, it's, oh, well, you're not acting so feminine now because you're standing up for yourself. Seriously, I've seen that. I mean, it's like, no, we're being bitches because you're being an asshole. But even for, like, I had the same similar issue to you in your suit, Sparrow. I finally had my first, like, got hit on by somebody, and it was creepy because they followed me. Like, literally, I'm walking to my car, and they're following me. And I didn't feel comfortable turning around and going, get the fuck away from me, or leave me alone, because they could easily play off. I do not believe they noticed I was trans. So it would have been like, oh, well, I was just walking out. You're being too sensitive.
Yeah.
It's, you have to be meek and passive. And if you try to stand up and fight, it's seen as, oh, well, you're just being too emotional.
Yeah. And it's a weird balancing act.
And it's a balancing act I never had to worry about as a guy. Just make sure you don't cry. That was literally the rule. Crying was seen as weak. Punching a hole in the wall and almost breaking my hand was seen as normal. Not lying, that has happened. And it can be very rough, especially when you have to learn all those new rules and social norms and things.
And it sucks because you shouldn't have to have those rules and norms to conform to in the first place. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there are times where you have to conform to them for, I keep saying survival, but it's very true.
It very much is.
Some people will say, like, if you reject a man and they go, like, crazy apeshit on you, well, it was your fault because you didn't let him down easy. or, you know, it's
you,
like,
you obviously were leading them on and you did, you left them with that.
Yeah. Or if you do let them down easy, people will be like, well, you are being way too nice. He's being a creep. It's like, well, what do you want me to do? Like, which one is it? You know, and it's going to be a lot of back and forth. And it's not only rough to learn, but it's hard to figure out the balance of when you have to do that and when you don't have to do that.
Yeah. And it's also, well, it's even the why were you in that situation to begin with? I've had to learn not to walk in dark areas at night. I never had to worry about that.
Yeah.
Now I have to. And it's luckily I figured out the things before it got dangerous. But when I was followed to my car, I wasn't leading this guy on. I was literally in a t-shirt. I actually was wearing exactly what I'm wearing right now. Bed pants that are all the way to the floor. A tank top and my hoodie was zipped up. My hair was a complete wreck. I looked like hell. There was nothing you could latch onto, but this guy did.
Yeah. And that's why what you're wearing or how you're performing or what you're choosing to portray doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. I think the only way only reason I get away with so much of performing in fursuit, because I make poses and everything that if I posed outside of suit, you would totally say it was sexual. It's because I have a Dutch angel dragon. We get away with murder.
Oh God, that's so true.
Everything we do is just translated as cute.
And the cute filter, the cute lens.
Yes, it has saved me. If I switched over to getting the newer fursuit I want, which is a African wild dog that actually is Ruby, I'm in trouble. I'm going to be sitting in the same boat as like Kiani is, who cute and bubbly, but she has a skin tight suit.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of skin tight suits.
I mean, you don't have to be skin tight to get sexualized.
Yeah, the crazy bear thing. Suit.
Just sucks. It just sucks.
You have to portray somehow, some way that you're feminine. Again, I think the reason why Fiona catches shit is because it's known that she's a trans woman underneath, so they latch onto the fetish part of it.
Yep.
But you don't need that for it to happen, ever.
And that's where it drives me nuts when cis women try to, when they act as like TERFs, was trans exclusionary radical feminist, right? So if a cis woman is like, well, you don't have to deal with the struggles of women because you're technically a man. And it's like, no, The struggle may be different, but it's still tied to femininity. So the struggle is inherently tied together as the same. And mm-hmm. that's where the support should come in. Like, yeah. I just genuinely don't understand how somebody could be queer and a transphobe or a feminist and a transphobe. It just doesn't connect in my brain.
It's again, if I shut down all of my brain and common sense, I could justify in saying that I've only had to deal with being a woman for 3 years, now 3.5. But that doesn't change anything. It actually puts me at a very dangerous disadvantage because I've almost screwed up more than a few times going into situations that when I was a guy, it was completely safe because no one's going to screw with me.
You don't got the muscle memory yet.
Yeah, I don't. Like walking out of my card shop at 1 a.m. and down in the downtown of where I live and going, oh, this is stupid. Oof. And I will admit, I walked in, looked at one of my guy friends and said, hey, dude, can you walk a lady to her car? Without questioning, they did it.
I laugh not because it's funny, but because I get it.
Yeah, I understand. It's the sympathetic, God, that's true laugh.
Oh, man. I know. I feel like this episode so far has been a lot of struggles of women, which, you know, it's important to bring to light, right? But there also are so many positives to femininity and to womanhood, whether it's cis or trans or whatever. Womanhood is womanhood, right? And how our identities could be so tied within it. Like, I don't know. It's just there's a lot of struggles that come with being a woman, but there's also a lot of beauty. Like, even in the hardest times I'll have as a female presenting person or as a woman, there are still many moments every day where I'm just like, oh God, I love being a woman. You know, regardless of queerness or not, there is a lot of support and representation, and that just comes with it, even especially in the furry fandom. I feel like there's a lot of people in the fandom that just, they get it. You know, they get it. They have these experiences that can match up with yours, and then having similar interests just helps further that. You know, it's truly, it could be rough out there, but through all the harshness, I think it does make those support systems with each other stronger. Mm-hmm. And even with men who get in, who will support you, that also makes those stronger too.
Yes.
Space, you've been awfully quiet, babe.
I know. I've just been listening to you guys talk. That's all. I'm a man. I don't really have, like, this is a woman forward episode. So
what's that,
not
what's
much.
That song by Cher?
It's a man's world.
No, it's a, I think it's a woman's world.
Yeah.
By Cher.
I don't know. I don't really listen to Cher.
If Autumn was here, she would be able to tell me immediately. She loves Cher.
I think it's woman's world.
Yeah.
Oh, Cher, we love you. Oh, I do anyway. Can't believe
Then you got Cher. Then you got Beyonce. So.
Way to break the stereotype, Space. A gay man that doesn't listen to Cher?
I'm sorry. I have I have taste in other things. I also don't listen to Celine Dion.
Oh, no. Wow.
God.
I don't either.
I'm like the gay that knows what looks good on myself, but if you ask me to tell you a brand or something that you should wear, I have no idea. I don't care.
Here, I'll run the perfect test. This comes from a theater geek. Space, how many minutes are in a year?
I don't know.
Oh, you're in trouble, dude.
I don't know that either. Am I in
it's,
trouble?
It's 525,600. It's from the
Rent.
Rent. It's the opening song to Rent.
I've never seen Rent.
It's a joke from Family Guy where it's like, yeah, our 525,600 minutes. Ooh, Rent.
Oh my God.
Sorry,
God.
I just had to make that joke.
It's like every gay person has to have seen Rent, I've never seen Wicked.
You have to have memorized the play Rent. You have to love Celine Dion and Cher, and you have to be able to tell me in order every person who's ever played Peter Pan.
Every elder gay listening to this podcast while driving just took both hands off the wheels, flew them in the air, and went, Rent!
Nope, that's not me. Yeah. I'm a totally different type of gay. I'm the non-conforming.
Damn chromosomes.
I'm a non-conforming gay.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Either that's making it to the episode or that's the like headliner of the next blooper reel. Not sure.
I'm a non-conforming gay. I don't fall into your stereotypes.
Good. Keep breaking them. I'm pretty stereotypical as a lesbian, but that's okay.
You are. You have like the stereotypical haircut and like the tomboyish look. So
God.
That's like the stereotypical lesbian look of like the early 90s or late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh my God. I'm just turning more and more into a bull dyke as I age. God, I remember the first time I was like openly stereotyped was a dude in my high school. I was walking down the hallway and he just comes up to me and like bumps my shoulder. And he was like, you know, you walk like a man. And I was like, oh, good.
What?
Good. Good, actually.
Well, and this is also, I'm going to pull into up in the like queer trans women as well. There is also that thing of, because I get pictures of them all the time, people pull my old pictures of, I think the wording is baby trans. It's mm-hmm. at our beginning when we have no idea what looks good. And some of the outfits that some of us come up with are weird. Yeah, a lot of trans women catch a lot of shit for those days.
I mean, there's baby gay days too. We get it.
Where we haven't quite learned what looks good, so we kind of throw together what we think does, and it looks horrible, and it's used against us a lot.
Oh my God, it's not French tip nails.
I can't even paint French tips. I don't even have fingernails, or I would.
There's like the stereotypical gay that I'm thinking of right now, and it's the complete opposite of what I want to be. Like, there's like, for me, like, over the top flamboyant. Like, I'm flamboyant, but I'm talking like over the top. You clearly know they're the gay from the second they walk out that door. Like, I mean, from the second I talk, you'll know that I'm gay. But there's like the super flamboyant over the top gay, and then there's Space in a different corner just doing his thing. Stay away from me. I love glitter, but I don't love it that much.
Oh my God. And then there's the differences between the millennial gaze and the elder millennial gaze.
Yeah.
You're an elder millennial gaze space.
I guess I am.
You are. Or are you? I'm an old man. Yeah, you are. You're an elder millennial.
I think so.
You are.
Yeah. I'm only 37.
I can tell by the way you type.
What do you mean by the way I type?
Ruby, you gotta be on, you gotta agree with me on this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. What do you mean by the way I type?
The way you type? Okay. I have to pull up the Twitter. Let me pull up Twitter. It's the emojis that you use.
Oh.
And when you talk, like when you type in DMs, you're like, you don't use a lot of like exclamation points or anything like that. You're an it is what it is kind of typer.
Well, I don't use emojis at all, but that's because I'm a graphic designer and they make my eyes bleed.
I can't. Okay. For the life of me, when people do like the three, is it the three with a P or something like that? Or a colon with a P? It's something like, I can't read like emoji like in like type form. And then when it comes to things like, oh, what's the one that most people use? Like SOL. Like I don't remember what it is a lot of the time. So I'm like, what the hell is SOL? So I'll just be like, soul?
That's what makes you the elder millennial face.
to be fair, I don't remember what SOL means either.
It's like shit out of luck, I think. No. I don't know.
People don't use that anymore.
Straight out of luck? I don't know.
Space and I were you and I are the exact same age. So I don't even remember half of the emoji or text speak at all.
I feel like Deer Dog is the epitome of talking with emotes. Because she'll send something and then she'll be like blah, 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 and then she'll do like some sort of emote, and I'm like, what the hell is that? I don't know what that is.
My God.
Blah, 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 blah. I'm an elder.
It's okay. So
where are we? Are we on, are we on triumphs?
No, we're on representation and identity.
Okay.
So what I was saying before was we've been talking about a lot of negative things, and I think that's just natural because unfortunately there are a lot of tribulations that come with, you know, womanhood and queerness and all these things that people struggle with. But just like how we always bring up on this podcast, because it is a furry podcast, the furry fandom tends to provide a lot of comfort during those tribulations, even though there are, you know, times when there are things happening within the furry fandom that mm-hmm. go against women, like Fiona struggling with transphobia, or like me being stalked at a furry con for having feminine eyelids. Like, regardless of that, I would say for the most part, the fandom can be a space of support and comfort for a lot of women. And yeah. I think that comes with a lot of representation and visibility. And while when we look at the numbers themselves, while women are still the minority in the fandom, it's only growing. And I think with already being women and now having a similar interest, again, it's making that camaraderie stronger. And I also think that when it comes to women being able to create fursonas and not having to worry about having to put what society thinks is beautiful into their fursonas designs, it could just be truly them. It doesn't have to be thin and beautiful and stretch mark free and gentle and fit, you know, all those things. It could be whatever the hell they want it to be. And it's normal. And it is supported, and it's just, you know, you can have whatever you want. It's your persona. Nobody is going to judge you for it not being beautiful enough or it not being feminine enough. And I think that just gives women a lot of space to be able to explore their own interests and their own identities in a really unique way.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I know a lot of trans people have mentioned their personas helping them figure out their own transition as well.
Yeah, actually, I think that was an entire portion of Ash Coyote's fandom video was mentioning that of
identifying, finding identity through your persona.
Actually, this is perfect story for me. When I first, this was when I just dressed feminine. I went to a This was long before I came out as trans. I went to a costume wedding for one of my friends. I was wearing, sadly enough, those costume store wolf heads because I had nothing else, and a corset. And I passed by a mirror where at that time anything that was male was gone. because I was wearing a skirt, corset, breast forms, and a dog head.
Please tell me you have pictures.
Sorry, when you list it out like that, it made me, it just made me chortle.
I do. I'll see if I can find them somewhere and I'll post them later. But
it's like I'm wearing fishnet leggings, stilettos, I was. A corset,
yep.
breast
yep.
implants, and a wolf.
Everything I want to do.
But no, when I passed by a reflective surface for that first time, you can ask Autumn, I almost fell apart because that was the first time that I looked in the mirror and there was that it was just a woman staring at me and I almost fell apart. That was one of those first little signs of going, dumbass, you're trans. But so, yeah, being able to be in a fursuit and essentially visually erase everything of the gender you want to get away from, for lack of better terms, is very freeing. So if you're a woman that wants to present male or a male that wants to present female, it's freeing to be able to put on a costume and nobody knows. All markers are gone. Especially if you're a nonverbal fursuiter. Or yeah, nonverbal. That is what I was looking for.
And then it starts as, you know, a performance and as a costume, and then slowly and steadily it can help you figure out what you are and who you want to be outside of that costume, just as you, as a person, as a human being.
Yeah. It follows actually the same need of the beginning steps of transitioning is public presentation. So the fursuit, especially in the furry fandom, can supply that of I can try it. If I don't like it, you sell the fursuit, move on.
You can even do it with artwork too, since fursuits are so expensive.
Like, that too.
Just drawing your character. Like, I think a lot of whenever I talk with my trans friends or we've interviewed a few trans people in the past, it seems to start with, oh, my fursona was a male, but I started drawing it more feminine and I liked it. And then I started trying to dress like how I would dress my fursona. And then I liked it even more. And, you know, and it just steadily goes into that way. I know I can connect with that, not in a trans way, but when it comes to struggling with societal expectations of what is beautiful, especially like as a woman, there are, again, those certain things that are considered beautiful, like being thin and not having any scars or stretch marks and being quiet and small and all that stuff. And when I was in early college, my first 2 years of college, I struggled with eating disorder bad. I struggled with it bad. And it didn't help that there was a lot of like bad relationships with food in my family. But, you know, becoming a young adult and dealing with those societal expectations of what is supposed to be beautiful, I felt like I owed society my body image. Like, it, as a woman, it was my responsibility to be beautiful. Right. Mm-hmm. And I remember going through and I started being a furry when I was in like late middle school. So as I was going into college and I'm like, well, I'm a newer person. Maybe I should change my fursona. Like, I'm not the same person I was in high school. I'm 2 years into college now. I'm grown. I think it's time for a change. Mm-hmm. And being in the furry fandom and changing my fursona, like my fursona was originally like this neon green and gray and blue, like wolf dragon thing. It was very, very like middle school looking design. Right. And it was thin. Even though I wasn't. And I was like, okay, I think it's time to start making a character that actually looks like me. So I made a new fursona. I made her fat. I didn't make her stereotypically beautiful. I was like, this is just, it is what it is. She wasn't ugly, but it was just more accurate to what I was like. And over time, I started to draw her bigger and bigger to where it was more realistically my size. And then later, a little heavier than my size. And even though my fursona was technically fatter than I was, I still found that she was fine. She was beautiful mm-hmm. as is, and that it didn't matter what it looked like. And then you take that a step further, you know, it generally, the furry fandom doesn't necessarily care as much about body image as general society does, whether you're a man or a woman. Like, people don't care if you're fat or thin as often as compared to general society, I would say. So I think that combination of being surrounded by people who genuinely did not care about your weight and being able to draw myself as this character who was large and it didn't matter steadily, that combined with having people in my life that supported me helped me get out of that eating disorder, which was extremely mm-hmm. difficult. And even to this day, like, I don't have an eating disorder anymore. Luckily, I haven't relapsed into it. It's been a good 3 or 4 years since I've struggled with it. The fursona design that I have today breaks that boundary even more. Like, okay, now it has a shaved head. Now it has chin hair. Now it has stretch marks, like even less beautiful compared to what society thinks. And still, Persona is still fine. I can still draw it. Nobody in this fandom cares. And I think for women to be able to make these characters and to be surrounded by this community, that just, like, your character, that's just you. Nobody's judging you for what it looks like. And that's fine. I think that's so healing for a lot of women.
Yeah, definitely. Because I played with my character. Well, I used Hero Forge because I'm broke. But
it works, though.
Yeah, being able to manipulate and change how they look depending on how I want to try. I mean, even the image I used on the first episode I was on here, that was made on Hero Forge because it's all I had. But yeah, that's, I completely agree. And in terms of representation, because I'm looking through, I'm half looking and half looking at other things. I mean, as I said before, like in terms of art and fursuits, most of your people are represented by females.
Yeah.
Like, I'm hard pressed right now outside of music to name a male furry artist.
Like, I could name a few, certainly, but especially when it comes to fursuit makers, I struggle. Like, I struggle to name male fursuit makers. Most of the artists that I follow are either genderqueer or female, and I think that's not intentional. I don't think I'm going through and be like, oh, you're a man, not following you. It's just that way.
Yeah.
I think that's a big triumph of women in the fandom, though. Like, not only have you found a space where that you've carved for yourself, even though you're in the minority, but you're helping run this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Again, I'm just enjoying listening to you guys.
I'm trying to find...
I'm driving the boat, and you guys are the passengers.
So. We're just talking while you're sipping your margarita and driving the boat. Wait, is it illegal to drink while driving a boat?
I think not in my world.
It depends on how far out in the water you are.
Oh, we're just... God. We're technically, like, moving, but it's only because the waves are pushing us. We're still at the dock.
Cool.
Tied up. But I'm tooting the horn like I'm driving.
Beep, boop.
Honk, honk.
I'm trying to find... I've got some old artwork in my drive of, like, what my persona used to look like and the size and all that. I'm trying to find it to send it to you, Space.
And I'm trying to find that outfit.
Well,
the ADHD is trying to multitask.
I'm multitasking here.
But yeah, I think this image is like literally over 10 years old.
While you guys are doing that, I made a post on Twitter and I wanted to get some people's thoughts. And I basically asked them that, what are some common misconceptions of women in the fandom? And we had a couple people respond back. Ruby, not you, Ruby, a different Ruby. Some women are pushed to the side of the fandom, but mainly women AFAB. I don't know what AFAB is.
Assigned female at birth.
Okay. See? there's perfect example right there. Women and AFAB people are the biggest suit makers and the most popular artists as well. I'd also love to see more lesbian, sapphic, butch furry art in the general.
Oh, yeah. I follow tons of sapphic and butch furry artists. Mm-hmm.
Stone Fox says, some might say that women aren't as creative or outgoing. This is not true. Some of the most creative people are outgoing. People I have met or interacted have been women. Good Lord. I just hear this bing, bing, like going on.
That's me.
What are some highlights? Some resilience and triumph showcasing how women have overcome obstacles to thrive in the community.
Hmm.
Ha. Stumped you.
Well, no, I found the picture. About to send it to you.
I mean, I think the fact that women have found themselves in a place where they're very well known for being primary fursuit makers and for being involved in local fur groups, and there's a lot of con staff now that are also women. I think it's just a natural progression. Like, it feels weird to say that it's a triumph of tribulations because it's just women getting involved with their community and having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is a triumph in itself, that we're welcome in these spaces and that we feel comfortable enough putting ourselves out there. And I think that gives, you know, the fandom some good light too, saying like, hey, this is a safer space. You can express yourself here. You can have a place here. And not only can you have a place here, you can have some leadership here, and it won't be you know, as questioned as it would be in other spaces. So I think that's certainly a triumph that women have in the fandom, and that's only going to get stronger and stronger as our community gets more diverse.
I'm like, you said it better than I could have. That's exactly right. Yeah, it's just, I'm trying to add to what you said, but I can't. It is in natural progression. We now have female con owners.
Oh, like the con chair from Denver?
Con chair. Con chair. Bubbles. Yes.
Yeah, we have con chairs, general staff members, social media managers. Like, they're all there. And then there's, and on a smaller scale, too, we have fursuit makers that are running reliable businesses as artists and fursuit makers. We have women creating, like, and helping with furry podcasts. Like, you know, it's just a natural progression, right? And again, it's only getting better. Ruby, what are some strategies you think that people within the fandom can implement to make the safe spacer for women and for trans women? Like, what can people do? What can people consider to continue making this fandom a space where women can do those things?
Honestly, the only one line is coming to, like, into my head to answer that. And it's quite literally, don't be an asshole.
Yeah?
It's true. Treat people with basic respect. Don't follow someone because you think, oh, their fursuit's hot or cute and I'm going to film them. Don't start shit with people because they're performing and having fun and not doing anything to hurt anybody. Leave people alone when they're trying to just live their life. And that covered you, Fiona, and myself. Because mine, literally being trans female, I'm being bothered just for existing in a space that fits my gender identity. It is taken, even just simple as going to a public restroom is life-threatening, and that's sad. But I will tell you, at conventions where I'm around my friends and my family, my chosen family, I don't care. But just in general, in public and in the fandom, just treat people with a basic human respect. Don't fetishize or sexualize things, and don't be creepy.
Yeah.
I think I covered it pretty well there.
Yeah.
Don't be an asshole.
And I think my only addition to that would be, not only don't be an asshole, but don't turn a blind eye. Because you yourself could be a good person and follow all those rules. But if you see somebody struggling because somebody else is being an asshole, and you turn a blind eye because you're just minding your business, then, you know,
you're siding with the asshole.
You're technically becoming the asshole by doing that. So, you know, treat people with basic human respect and speak up when you see something going wrong.
I did ask the same question that you asked Ruby to Twitter, and they have a genuine, like, pretty much equal response. A lot of them say that general respect, just because someone is a woman, doesn't mean they won't be cool friend person to hang out with, and don't be gross by us.
Yeah,
that was one person.
Yeah,
another said, you know, being serious, I would say just respect, treat everybody regardless of gender with equality, without any sort of favoritism. Flirting will happen as long as people are respectful of the boundaries. I don't see it as a problem. Another person said, nothing. Normal society has to change the tone that women are equal to men first. Can't argue with that.
Yeah,
can't argue with that one. Center women and AFAB voices and struggles more. Spotlight success stories and contributions to the fandom. Education, call out and loudly condemn the misogyny.
That one's perfect. That covered all the ideas I had.
They worded it without cussing.
How
do people do that? I have trouble with it.
That came from Moody Mama.
Let's go, Moody Mama.
Let's see. From Randolph, they said, have a females can be furry too moment, like having a dedicated week or something showing off all the stuff females do in the fandom, showing it's not necessarily a guy thing.
Yeah. Well, like, I don't know what their furry name is, but I know that Ruby Charity Goblin, her Twitch channel, every penny she raises from that goes to charity.
That's cool.
And if you don't know Ruby, you know her mother, who's Jamie Lee Curtis. I know Ruby is a furry and I love her to death, but yeah, everything she raises on Twitch goes to charity. And I think she hit partner in like 1 week, which is insane.
You know, I get that, like, it's a thing to have conventions raise money for, like, animal, you know, shelters and stuff. But I'd really like to see a furry convention raise money to go towards, you know, women's rights, for instance, or I'm trying to think.
Yeah, but it's kind of based in where you're at. I mean, yeah, furries raise for animals.
But why can't can't furries raise for themselves, though? Like, there's a lot of furries out there that have mental instability. Why can't we raise money to go towards something that's
towards that? But what I was going to say is, like, the Magic the Gathering community, all of, I think, 90% of our charities go to Trans Lifeline and Trevor Project.
Oh, I love that.
Literally, that's awesome. And then we do have, like, again, in May, I have a 12-hour mental health awareness stream that is a charity. That's Magic the Gathering. It's more based on your central location. Furries, if we see cute animals, we're going to throw money at it.
It's true. It's true. But I see our fandom as something is so diverse that we could actually do more and do more for change. Animals are great, but people are the ones that make the change. And I figure that we should probably put that money towards where people can make that change.
I am seeing a lot more conventions do people first charities. I know FWA has changed their charity this year to the Lost and Found charity, which is, you know, helping with queer homelessness, which is, you know, human first. I think we need to see more of that in many, many other places and facets of our community.
And actually, it'd be kind of interesting, too, to kind of see, like, a convention go out into the community and do community service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which we've started to.
During the con itself.
During the con, because I know in North Carolina, because of Kage, we do walks for...
Walks for family?
ALA.
ALA.
Dog Bomb. Like, what? I can't remember.
ALS.
Thank you.
Yes.
Again, my brain does not work. But yeah, ALS walks. I know that, especially since Dog Bomb passed away, we do, like, those walks and charity walks that happen a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, that's kind of, again, we have someone to rally behind. So we do a few human first charities, but at the cons, it's also trying to do a community service thing during a weekend convention. Mm. It's like herding furries, which is harder than herding cats.
Understandable.
Oh, yeah. It probably can be done. I just can't think of how.
Oh, God. Imagining, like, somebody herding a bunch of furries, like literally, like you would herd sheep. But it's just a bunch of furries at a convention.
Now I'm picturing a border collie furry walking around and nipping at fursuits.
Oh, that's, my God.
Now that's adorable.
So fun. All right, well, we about ready to wrap this one up?
Yep. I think why don't you take us out?
Sure thing. Well, if you have any stories or any experiences you'd like to share as a woman, as a trans one, genderqueer person in our fandom, we would love to hear from you. Or if you have any show ideas, we are trying to get more involved with our listeners and getting you guys more in on the show themselves. So if you would like to talk with us, you can message us on Twitter @FromTheMuzzle, or you can email us at talktothemuzzle@gmail.com.
And that's it. Sorry, I totally just blanked on that.
Conclusions are hard. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, that works. Bye.
Bye, everybody.